So this talk is about robot failures. Specifically, it's for an SL85 storage tech library, but it might be of interest to other people too. We've talked about how DMF handles drive and tape errors many times now. A key assumption was that drive failures and volume failures are unrelated. When the robot in a library fails, this isn't so. Disclaimer, that's what we've got, and that's the stuff I don't have recent experience with. In preparing this presentation, I actually inquired about Spectralogic libraries to see whether they had an equivalent failure mode, and the answer is no, not really, we think. I think it's really no, not really, full stop. Spectralogic apparently have some features coming down the track that might open them to an analogous failure, but right now it seems they don't have it. Okay, for those that haven't met an SL8500, it's a brief description of the layout. It's got four horizontal rails. It's actually U-shaped, but that's only to confine it within the cabinet. There are four of them. You have either one or two single-handed robots in each rail, 0 to 16 tape drives per rail. Three of the four have access to the access port for putting in tapes and spitting them out again. In addition, there are two elevators which are able to transport tapes vertically between the rails. A lot of the time, the rails operate independently of each other. And that includes they can fail independently of each other, and that's good. If one robot dies, the others ought to keep on going. The main gotcha is if you have a tape in the top rail and it decides to mount it mounted in a drive in a different rail, it can only do it by using the elevator, and it's assuming that both robots in the relevant rails are in operation. So what I want to talk about is what happens when that's not true. We had one example about a year ago, and that was when we realised that DMF didn't handle it overly brilliantly. Then over this past Christmas, we had three failures in rapid succession, which gave us plenty of time to debug a script to help solve the problem. Well, not solve it, but ameliorate it. Since we've had the script, it hasn't failed once, so the script's working perfectly. Okay. What happens when a robot fails? Okay. If you're trying to access a tape in a rail that's run by a faulty robot, the system realises immediately that it can't do it. DMF is told... Hang on, what am I doing? No, that's right. DMF is given a message from ACSLS, the management software, essentially saying tape unknown. It's bad wording. It should be tape not available, which would be completely accurate, but it comes up as tape unknown. That's okay. It happens immediately. There are no retries. If it's unavailable now, it's not going to retry because it'll still be unavailable in 2 seconds' time. There's no point looping around retrying. DMF locks the tape to take it out of circulation, and it cycles around until somebody fixes something. This is great. This is exactly what you want. It locks out the tape. It does it immediately. It doesn't fool around with retries, and it does heal itself in time. You can accelerate that. The only gotcha is that you may get a few thousand emails, one per tape, informing you that it's unknown, when you know perfectly well that it is known. That's a minor thing. I don't know if DMF man will show this as a single message 1,000 times or whether it'll show it as 1,000 messages one time. The text will be different by the VSN each time, but it's 99% the same message.
Not sure.
I think I know. Okay. Where it doesn't handle it gracefully is as far as the driver's concerned. If the robot's dead, then the drives on that rail can't be used. DMF isn't especially aware of this. It tries, it gets a mount error, it fails, and then it'll retry. And it'll retry, and it'll retry. If it persists long enough, eventually the drive will be configured down to stop this cycle. But it isn't able to learn from the first failure. It needs a whole sequence of them, and you have to the moon has to be in the right phase and all sorts of other things that were described in a presentation last time. That's not good. And as it says in the second blue bullet there, if the tape happens to be in the same rail as the drive, then it'll notice that it can't get to the tape before it realises that it can't mount the tape. If you can't get the tape, you can't attempt to mount it. So the drive will only get into trouble if it's trying to grab a tape from a different rail via the elevator. Now, the Storage Tech Sun Oracle software tries to minimise use of the elevator because it's overhead. What happens with TMF and OpenVolt when they want to mount a tape is they say to the controlling software, I want to mount these tapes. Please give me a list of drives in the order that you think I should consider them. And in the Storage Tech scenario, it returns a list of tape drives to the mounting service, and the drives in the same rail will be at the top of the list, and the drives that involve the use of the elevator will be further down the list. And in normal situations, DMF takes the entries off the top of the recommendations, which is good. Okay, so and you get an email per drive downing, but as I said, the drive downings don't happen readily enough for that to be an issue. Okay, be nice to have it fixed. In an ideal world, and this is the world that Ted runs, because it involves features, you volunteered to come here. both ACSLS and SL Console, which are the two lumps of software in the Storage Tech world that have relationships with libraries, they both support SNMP. It's technically possible for that for DMF to trap that and realise that it's had a failure. SL Console may be able to deliver emails which you could catch with Procmail, same idea. If you were hard up, you could run a command line thing through SSH and catch the output. Yeah. If one of those happened, and if it had a knowledge of the library configuration, it could decide that this failure had taken out 4 tape drives and 2,000 tapes and disable it all in one hit and issue with one nice tidy email, and then ideally reverse the process once the engineer had come and fixed the robot. I'm sure that'll happen one day, but in the meantime, we have to make do. And this involves an administrator who's at work, or at least awake, who gets a flood of emails of about 5,000 unknown tapes and knows enough about it to realise that's probably not the issue at all, but it's a robot failure. Then you do the operations by hand. That's a bit of a pain because administrators, although they love working 24 hours a day, they don't always read their email full time. Okay. after we had three failures in rapid succession, we realised we couldn't actually prevent it or fix it, but we thought we might be able to help it a little bit. When you configure your tape library, if you've got multiple drive tapes, normally, if you have a choice, you would put them on separate rails in an SL8500 configuration, or I don't know enough spectrologic to comment on what's analogous. If you've got a mixture of different media types and a mixture of different drive types, you don't want to mix them up because it'll be slow. In our case, we have 9940s in the top two rails, and we have T10,000s in the bottom two rails, and where possible, the media is on the same rails as the drives. Elevator is slow, so you don't want to use it. Okay. Now, the other thing is that all sane DMF sites have at least two copies of their files. Paranoid ones have three or more. It would be nice if the primary copies and the second copies weren't in the same rail, so that a single failure couldn't take out access to both copies. It's probably a good idea to scatter your empty tapes around the place too, so that whatever fails, you've still got a chance of grabbing a tape to stop the file system filling. At least with the storage tech gear, when a tape is dismounted from a drive, it does not put it back in the library slot that it came from. It puts it somewhere convenient. This usually means in the same rail as the drive because you're avoiding elevator use. It may or may not be close to the drive, I don't know. But the point is they don't go back where they came from. If you organise your tapes nice and tidily in the library, by tomorrow they won't be that way anymore. It'll only be minor for a while, but as time goes on, it'll get less and less organised. Was entropy increases or is that decrease? I forget. Okay. Oops. Is that what I wanted? Yeah, so the script we wrote is trying to implement those three ideas in black there. Yes. This is just an example, and it's not a very good example, but I ran out of time. 9940s are only for primary copies of tapes. In fact, that's our outgoing technology. These days, they're only used for small tapes, and they're slowly being moved over to T10,000s. We're hoping that we might complete that migration before we buy 10,000 C drives and start the process all over again, but that's not a given. We're in a permanent state of architecture upgrade as far as tapes are concerned. Okay, so in the top two rails, we've got 9940s, bottom two T10,000s. We have more 9940s than actually fit in two rails, so some elevator use is unavoidable. Can't be helped. Because of that imbalance, we've observed that the bottom rail, over time, has more empty slots in it than all the others. It's just an artifact of this behaviour of the drive. Well, after a tape is dismounted, it's plonked somewhere of the library's choice, somewhere convenient to the drive. It's weird. I don't fully understand it, but it's quite consistent. So we run our script, and the numbers here were just to give an indication of how many tapes are involved with each of these steps. They're not as interesting as I thought they were going to be when I actually ran this test, but what the heck. So moving T10,000s back to the rails where they belong, seven tapes had to be moved after a 24-hour period since the last reorganisation. Try and push 9940s up to their rail, knowing that they won't all fit. It moved eight of them. T10,000 tapes containing primary copies went to the second lowest rail, and that was alternated with the T10,000s containing secondary copies. This is alternated. one tape down here, one tape back, one tape down, one tape back. That's because there's a good chance one of these rails is full, and the only way you can do any movement is by using the slot that got freed up by the previous move. You learn the hard way as you go along. And then for good luck, it scatters a few empty tapes around the place, and in this particular example, all the other rails were full, so it couldn't do it. And we run this script with cron. We hope it'll make us more resilient when we have our next robot failure. But as I said, so far as a preventative measure, it's working perfectly. Yep.
Rob's got a question.
Yep.
Do you not have redundant robots?
You can have two robots per rail.
But do you?
We don't know. And apparently, if a robot dies, the other robot can push the dead one to one side, provided it hasn't seized up. Our most recent failure, the little rubber rollers disintegrated, the thing ground to a halt and locked in place. So if we had a second robot, we still would have been dead. Okay.
So that can be done, but it's not supported in practice.
We have the added complication that we are guests at the Bureau of Meteorology, and the ACSLS server is theirs, not ours. So tweaking ACSLS is not an option. We consider that we're lucky to have command line access to it. Yes, nice idea, but not applicable. Some of them, well, the engineers were a bit cagey about it. They tried to say that it was actually a drive failure that the software blamed on the robot, which sounded pretty unconvincing.
Gareth gives 5 minutes and then we'll wrap up and